All right. All right. Thank you so much for coming here and attending this session. This session, we're going to talk about the student growth, measurement of student growth, and the student growth models available for Michigan schools. And we're going to focus on the measurement of student growth for educator evaluations. You know, there's a lot of concepts that do cross over for educator evaluation for the purposes of school accountability, but that's going to be a session later on this afternoon. We're really focusing on measurement of student growth for setting success criteria for educators, setting success criteria for teachers, and the use of student growth within educator evaluation. So my name is Brian Lloyd. I am an education research consultant for the Michigan Department of Education. I work within the Office of Educator Excellence. We really focus on the educator workforce, teacher recognition programs, teacher certification, teacher prep, kind of looking at the ecosystem of our educator workforce across the state and how we can get excellent and equitable distribution of teachers across our state.
I previously worked as a consultant.
Okay, good. No?
Just in case.
Because if Jim Pellegrino taught us something, it was that microphones will turn back on when you least expect it. So I'll just go ahead and do the handheld here.
Hello?
Oh, yep. Turn this one off or on? Oh, yeah. When it's going
to
turn back on, yeah.
Right. You don't want it to be on.
Exactly. It's a good way to wake up, I guess, as we're still in the morning, but. Okay, how's this? Okay, good. Okay, so I worked previously as a consultant at an ISD and also as a MTSS coach and implementation consultant. And as a school psychologist as well for ISD and for a district. So I'll let my co-presenter introduce himself.
I think mine is working.
Oh, yours is still working?
Yeah.
For now.
So my name is Joseph Martineau. I am a senior strategic advisor at Educational Testing Service. And prior to that, I was a senior associate at the Center for Assessment, where we did a lot of work with states and large districts around assessment accountability and educator evaluation. Prior to that, I was deputy superintendent at the Michigan Department of Education, and one of my roles at the Michigan Department of Education was to sit on the Michigan Council for Educator Evaluation. And it was a fascinating process, a very difficult process, because of the kinds of changes that were made, and not a lot of excellent research yet about educator evaluation and the connection of student growth to that. So that's who I am.
So before we get too much into talking points and so on and so forth, I think it'd be great, raise your hand if you've had difficulty accessing the internet. I know there's some people, oh goodness, that's a lot of hands. Raise your hand if you had access to the internet, but you have access to a smartphone that does have access to the internet. Okay, that's at least most of the hands. So we were planning on using an engagement activity. We want to learn a little bit from you before we talk about any of our talking points. Joseph and I talked about, we both like, when we're talking about important topics, starting with why. The whys affect all of our actions moving forward, right? So why? What is the purpose of measuring student growth within educator evaluations? I can tell you what MDE's priorities and purposes are, but I think it's important to learn what yours are. And what does Michigan educator evaluation legislation require for measuring student growth? So what is your understanding? It's one thing that we have found pretty frequently. that when we present in public forums is the understandings of what is required by the legislation really differs from table to table and sometimes person to person, right? And because there was legislation that came out in 2011 that formed a lot of people's opinions, and then different legislation comes out 2015, 16, and then again two more iterations of that legislation, right? And so what is your understanding about the requirements for measurement of student growth within educator evaluations? So if you could go to use your smartphones, maybe you'll be a little bit more limited in text, but if you could go to sli.do, we would like to capture that that your understandings and your understandings of the purposes of measuring student growth within educator evaluation. Why do we do it? I would like to use that opportunity to capture that feedback from you. And so that event code again is MSTCSG2. Oh, thanks. SG2. Well, you know what? We have to. So you're going to be asked the first question and asked to respond, what is the purpose? So we're starting with, what is the purpose? So you can see up here on the screen what people are entering in for what their perceptions of what is the purposes of measuring student growth within educator evaluations. So I'm seeing a lot of to hold teachers accountable. I'm seeing a lot of to fire our way to Finland. And so I am seeing a lot of punitive, right? This is to either motivate teachers for the purpose there's for firing, right? Or for holding people's feet to the fire. So that's interesting. So I'll give like one more minute and then I'll switch to the next question.
Well, I'm hearing an interesting thing here. What pretty common in this list is to have something more of an objective way to evaluate teacher performance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's We'll get a little bit into that as well as we continue.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and switch to that next question. What does Michigan educator evaluation legislation require? What's required for measuring student growth? What does the legislation require? Too much. I'll put this in present mode too. Hey. I know there's at least two responses there. Yeah. Math, lots of math.
Go to your website.
You go to your, yeah, not good. I've lost track. To be perfectly honest.
So what was the one that had the?
We moved this to a poll versus to just collect them versus the we have a one where you like the most comments right now. Okay. So these are some really interesting feedback. There's a lot of different portions of what's required within the legislation. So we'll hopefully address all of the all of the different aspects that we've we've seen, both within the purpose and the legislative requirements. So how do we get back to present? There we go, present. So I like Slido for the speak to the wall aspect versus making feedback sometimes a little bit personal, especially with issues that can be a bit controversial. So let me talk a little bit about legislation and the requirements within legislation. There was a lot of accurate statements within what does legislation require. As I think just about everybody in the room knows, the educator evaluation legislation, which is MCL 380-1249, that's the Ed Eval legislation, requires that this year, the measurement of student growth, at least right now, is required to be 40% of the educator evaluation, the summative rating of the educator evaluation. Now there's been back in 15-16, the legislation said that it was 25%. It has been 25% since 2015. It was supposed to increase to 40% last year, but there was legislation that occurred in April of 2019 that kind of kicked that can one more year. To this current school year. And so this is the year now that student growth and assessment is 40%. Now, of this 40% that is required for measurement of student growth, right, 60% would be the observation tool, the instructional framework is what we call it, to determine teacher practice, right, of what are the instructional practices. Another important portion is 4 tested grades and subjects. Half of this 40% is to be determined through state assessment student growth, right? And so 4 tested grades and subjects, this 40% would be split. Half, right? So that would mean that also means that no more than 50%, because it said must be 50%. So no more than 50% would be measurement of student growth for state assessment. The other half, or 20% of the total, would be measurement of student growth with LEA, Local Education Agency, selected assessment. So that can look very, very different depending on what assessments that you're using, what your teachers value, how your teachers define their success criteria, and so on and so forth. The other half, next important question is, what is a tested grade and subject? Okay? We give the M-STEP in third grade, right? That should be a tested grade and subject, right? Well, it's tested grade and subject with student growth data available to you, right? We don't have student growth data available to us in third grade because it requires 2 data points to be able to measure student growth. It's the first time we ever give state assessment. There is no student growth. We give state assessment in science and social studies, but there are 3 years that happened between data points in science and social studies. That means you have the best teacher in the entire world in 7th grade, the worst teacher in the entire world in 6th grade, and we have 1 metric, 1 score that defines how successful they were with their instruction for both of those 2 teachers. If we said, okay, if we require the use of science and social studies, we'd be opening up school districts across the state to justifiable litigation for the results of those educator evaluations, right? So there's no logical way that you can make definitively say that the score is a result of that individual teacher's instruction. And legislation within 380-1248 does say that individual attribution does need to be used to predominantly to determine those ratings. To be used for tenure purposes in hiring and firing decisions. So so that means we have grades 4 through 8 available to us. In 11th grade, again, we have 4 years now of between data points. So we have, that leaves us with grades 4 through 8 in subjects, ELA and math. Now, that leaves us with haves and have-nots, although we were going to have haves and have-not anyway. That doesn't make it any better or worse. I mean, no, it certainly doesn't make it any better. We'll put it that way. In grades 4 through 8, ELA and math, this requirement, this is the MD's recommendation of the legislative interpretation. I've described this as teachers who are not teachers of record of ELA or math. Everybody else, right? Everybody else. That means what? 78% of teachers across the state, or more, would be within this. Now, this is also first-year teachers, right? Because we might as well bring this up now, because this is most people already know this, right? When do the state assessment results come out? When are rep ratings due? In June, right? So this means that state assessment results measure the instruction that occurs the year prior. So if you are a first-year teacher, first ever year, you don't have student growth data that's attributable to your instruction. So now there's other legislative requirements as well. Use of 3 years of student growth data to be able to provide better psychometric adequacy, technical adequacy, and the use of multiple measures is required. That's just an assessment best practice, right? You don't make high stakes decisions with one assessment. Nobody. Who does that? Nobody does that, right? If you're at the MSTC, you know that. So the use of multiple measures is required, and it's a legislative requirement. So now I'll hand it over to Joseph to talk about the MCEE.
So the MCEE, we did a lot of work on thinking about how we could propose an educator evaluation system that was focused on continuous improvement rather than on punitive applications. And at the time, the only things that were really available were some measures of classroom teaching, kind of the classroom observation tools, and a few approaches to measuring growth. And neither of them had a lot of good documentation about this kind of use. In fact, there were some warnings against this kind of use by the authors of some of the observation tools. And there was quite a bit of controversy in the field around the use of aggregate student growth measures as a measure of effectiveness, because that is essentially saying that's a cause and effect claim. And if you're going to make a cause and effect claim where neither the teachers nor the locations nor the students were randomly selected or randomly assigned, it's very, very difficult to make a causal claim about effect. It tends more to be a measure of kind of a description of what is happening. And so we had, one, a charge to develop a recommended system. We had constraints in the legislation that we had to work with. And so it ended up being a full 2-year process. It was supposed to be like a 3-month process, but that just wasn't going to happen. And it was a full one, worked for a full year before recommending a system, and then there was some follow-up reports as well that looked at kind of the quality of the measures in both observation tools and in growth. And you can see the final report, and there's an interesting follow-up to that report that is also, it more looks at the pilot that we asked the legislature to allow us to run in, I think it was 5 districts, where we looked at both observation tools and growth models that were used. So ultimately, that worked its way through the legislature. Some things were adopted as we recommended, and some things were not. And that's kind of how we got where we are. So, as I said, the primary use, the primary desire was to develop something that was fair, transparent, feasible for teachers and school administrators, and based on rigorous measurement standards and respect of professional ethical standards as well in measurement. So the idea was that this is supposed to help us improve instruction, help us improve overall as an entire state in terms of our student outcomes, and to support and target ongoing professional learning as kind of a facilitative approach to using growth and classroom observations, with a lot of protections built in around knowing that both the growth and the observation measures have a lot of noise in them, that you want to make sure that you have something consistent over multiple years and multiple measures so that you don't make really critical decisions without doing due diligence.
So raise your hand. I recognize a lot of people in the room. Raise your hand if you've been to the websites where MDE provides guidance and resources for measuring student growth within educator evaluations. Okay. That's about half, or at least half, which is good. It's a lot better than we were. Now I'm going to talk about the priorities that the MDE, the Office of Educator Excellence, and our unit that provides guidance for educator evaluations. The priorities are whys. For why is it that we measure student growth within educator evaluations? Why do we evaluate educators? Right? What are our priorities for the use of this data? Why do we do it? Well, really, everything comes down, and all of our guidance, some of our guidance just flat out won't make any sense at all without this focus. Educator evaluations, if we want it to be useful, have to facilitate a continuous improvement process for our educators, right? Our educator evaluation should be a primary driver that accomplishes our school improvement goals. If we set goals forth within our school improvement process that aren't highly aligned with our educator evaluations and aren't defined for the success criteria of our teachers, why are we doing this other than as a legislative checkbox? So in order to make educator evaluations useful, it really has to facilitate continuous improvement of our educators, right? It's to improve our practices. That's what should shape all of our actions and policies. Now, educator evaluations, I do a lot of presentations to, and last week I presented to MEA on Thursday and then MASA on Friday, right? And when horror stories come out from both teachers, from building administrators, and from district administrators, it's when an educator evaluation, the person who's either receiving or giving the educator evaluation, can't describe how rating got determined. So transparency and being able to describe how and why a rating is determined and what inputs came to determine the output is absolutely critical. Also, in order to facilitate continuous improvement, we do have to have rigor within our systems, and again, it has to be fair. So, but all of the other recommendations really are centered around, or priorities are centered around this continuous improvement, right? In order to have continuous improvement, we have to be able to provide, our systems has to provide cyclical, actionable feedback to improve teacher practice. That has to be defined, centered around the definition of success for students, for teachers, and for administrators. Hopefully those are very similar things. And it has to inform professional learning plans for our educators. If we just do it, put it on a shelf, without looking at strengths and weaknesses that are determined by what we've developed within our educator evaluations, we really impair the ability to use this to improve our practice. So everything should be centered. Educator evaluation should be centered around If our systems also are able to identify underperforming teachers, that's great. That is definitely a side benefit. But our actions, our policies, our procedures should be centered around. Right now, within the state of Michigan, there are over 98% of teachers who have effective and highly effective. If we design our systems for the less than 2% of teachers in the state of Michigan over the last 8 years at least, right? We're gonna design our systems around the less than 2% of teachers across the state who are minimally effective or ineffective. We are doing a disservice to 98% of teachers across our state. Let's design our systems for the 98% of teachers and facilitate continuous improvement for that 98% of teachers. That should be where our focus is. How can we make this work well for the vast majority, significant portion of teachers across our state? That should be where our focus is if we really do want to use this for facilitation of continuous improvement. So let's go back to that Slido. And I'd like us to talk about, ideally, right, if you could design your own ed eval system, legislation aside, and preferably not, I just wouldn't do it, assuming that you did have to have one, if you could design your own, what would your ed eval system look like? How would you design the educator evaluation system for your school district? If you could go back, I need to shift the previous one. Okay, so ideally, if you go back to Slido, ideally my district would improve our student growth measurement practice by. And if you could finish that sentence, if you could design your own, what would it look, sound, feel like? And for these, you can like, if you see somebody else's design, somebody else's proposed practice, you can like that idea. And it will bring it up to the top of our contributions so that it will remain on the screen longer. Unfortunately, those who are using your smartphone, that's a lot to do with. My thumbs are just not that fast. So I wish we had computer access for everybody. But we've got 6 likes for, I would not use state assessment data. I would use local data only. And if I had my computer on me, I would like that one too. I don't want to affect the voting on the likes here, but. Anonymous too. How much more time do we want to give him, Joseph? another minute. Oh, that would be awesome. Rating legislators using the same system that they've established. And have an accountability system that affects their hiring and firing decisions. Yeah. Yeah, this feedback is really helpful for me as I go back and have conversations with people back at the state, too. And I like this system because I just love quantifying stuff. And then to know that I have 21 likes, 18 likes, and it's just the geek in me, you know, it just follows me everywhere. So it looks like I think the inputs are slowing down a little bit. Just to let you know too that as you all know, number one, there's a difference between legislators and MDE, right? We can ask legislators for things that doesn't. You would be surprised how many people do not even read my emails. Let alone my legislative proposals. So, and that's true for our office as well. So, what we try to do is with the legislation we're given, what makes the most sense, right? What's the guidance that we have? How can we file the legislation with the best outcomes possible given the limitations that we're given with the legislation? So we do have to file the law, and we have to support that, follow the law. But we have proposed supports for and legislative advocacy for number one, keeping student growth at 25% and not increasing it to 40%. We've also proposed having the use of state assessment student growth be optional for districts rather than mandated. And we're also trying to provide advocacy for using assessment that represent the individual attribution of teachers' instructions as well, and we're trying to focus policies around that as well, but especially this keeping student growth at 25% and getting and having state assessment optional versus mandatory are definitely two things that have a lot of agreement, not just with an MDE, but across with educational stakeholders across the state. And I do think that we're starting to see a little bit of movement with that, but I wouldn't put any eggs in any baskets at this point. But I do think it's a good idea to, we all have avenues of legislative advocacy, and if you feel strongly about a position, I recommend you to have conversations with those avenues of the more voices that advocate, the better likelihood that that advocacy will result in action, whatever that position is.
Is this on?
Yep.
Okay. So, that's fine. There you go.
Okay, so I mentioned before the website, the MDE provides guidance and priorities and FAQ and calculator tools, and so on and so forth, for measurement of student growth with an educator evaluation, at evals in general, right? So over half the people raised their hand had already been there. For those who didn't raise your hand, bookmark this website, because there is some, I think, useful resources there, although there's some bias there, but... the availability of what resources does MD have for helping districts measure student growth with ed eval? FAQ, frequently asked questions and answers to those questions. At a glance, which is kind of a policy document. Student growth score exclusion guidance. The law allows you to exclude scores, especially when those scores are invalid for any valid reason. There's a guidance document for that available on the website. Educator evaluation research reports that Joseph mentioned some of the data available on those earlier. Student learning objectives, guidance document for districts, FAQ, a template where if you fill out this template, you have written a student learning objective, a calculator tool that was designed and intended to be used within SLOs. Although you don't have to implement SLOs, you can use it. It's designed to be assessment agnostic for a variety of different local assessments. And then student growth calculator tools for student growth percentiles for measuring student growth with state assessment. So this SGP calculator tool is relatively easier to use, not to say that it's easy, but measuring student growth with state assessment, the measure that most districts across the state are using for measuring student growth with state assessment is a model called student growth percentiles. Right, it's data provided by the state of Michigan, available on the BAA Secure site. SGPs provide a comparison provides the magnitude, how much growth, essentially, over two differing data points when comparing students with students who are very, very like scores. So students who are not proficient are compared against other students who are not proficient. Students who are advanced are compared against other students who are advanced. Although that peer comparison group is much smaller. It's almost similar, if not identical, scores to other students with the similar identical scores across the state. So. One issue that we have too is trying to shift people from proficiency mindset to growth mindset. This is probably the number one problem that we've been facing across the state when providing guidance. People say, here's state assessment or assessment, right? Their mind goes back, okay, well, what we've been doing for 100 years. Proficiency, you're either this or you're that, right? Versus measuring impact. Right, which is really what we're trying to do. What is the impact of instruction, given the limitations that we have of measuring that impact? And so, essentially, what student growth percentiles do is this student who with a scale score of 1634, two previous years scores of 1510, 1412. They're compared against all other students across the state with 1634, 1510, and 1412, right? So then a year of instruction happens. So after this year of instruction occurs within a teacher's classroom, now we get the next year's MSTEP scores. We have now this student here, they achieved a score of 1694. This student within this peer group of similar scores, 1674, 1712, so there's a higher change of scores and a lower change of scores relative to the student with students with similar prior achievement scores. So this student had a high amount of growth, and this student had a low amount of growth, and the student in the middle had a middle. So this is a gross oversimplification of the actual, it's like a half page of calculation to determine this, but essentially what happens is these changes in scores are normed, right? And norming the changes of scores determines student growth percentiles. So a student with a much greater score change from 1 year to the next is an SGP of 95. A student with much, much less growth is a SGP score, would achieve a SGP score of five, and the one right in the middle would achieve a score of 50. So that's essentially what it is. Now, the distributions of these SGPs are not what you would anticipate using looking at a normal curve. They're a flat distribution, and so the amount of schools with an average SGP of 40 is right around 11 or 12%. So it's not 40% of teachers are going to be ineffective, or 39% of, the distributions are different, and there is a much smaller quantity of teachers who are going to achieve an average SGP of 39 or less. So that's another important thing to kind of point out is that detail as well, which is a segue to this next slide, which is MDs provided a recommended average SGP required for differing student growth ratings. So a rating of 19, an average SGP of 19 or less, one, between 20 and 39.9, two, 40 and 59.9, three, and anything above 60 or above. So this does not mean 60% of teachers across the state are going to have a rating of four. Again, the distributions are would be much smaller, 16%. Don't quote me on that, because I'm trying to do it off the top of my head. But six would achieve a mean SGP of 60 or more. So these ratings, and if you want to know what your school district average or mean SGP is, this data is available to any parent in Istanbul. It's publicly available on My School Data. Go to My School Data, assessments, growth, ISD, district, school, state, school year, grade, subject, and you will see what your school or what your district's average SGP is. And we've also developed a student growth calculator tool, where if you copy and paste in the MSTEP or PSAT 8, 9 in 8th grade data files, copy and paste them into this tool, and then from your student information system, paste the UICs, unique identifier codes, from your student information system into this tool, it'll automatically calculate and determine whether the teacher teaches ELA math or ELA and math. It'll automatically determine what the SGPs are for what subjects you've determined for that teacher, and automatically calculate a 2 to 3 year average SGP and compare it against those cut scores that I showed on the previous two. Automatically, I mean, it's 14 steps. But better than 272 steps or whatever would be required to do this on your own, right? It determines a 1 through 4 score that can be more easily combined with your teacher framework score, Marzano, 5D plus, whatever you're using, to be able to determine at 60% and 40% what the summative rating would be. Transparency, fairness, and rigor are all important, and to the greatest extent possible with using state assessment continuous improvement as well. Now, we've worked with vendors, some of which are probably here, to replicate this tool, to make the reports, instead of 14 steps requiring copy-paste, to be available within 2 or 3 clicks, right? They have access to student information systems. They have access to teacher rosters, which MDE does not have. This is why we created this spreadsheet, right? MDE has no access other than TSDL, which is very, very small segment of populations, really can't be used for this purpose. So, because the TSDL was essentially turned off in 2015 or 16. These vendors do have access to both state assessment data, SGPs, and your teacher rosters through your student information system. So, 2 or 3 clicks, boop. Hopefully, the student growth calculator tool I showed you the last stage is used by districts as a fidelity check for your vendor for provided products. But if you have a data warehouse vendor that you're using that hasn't replicated the SGP tool and would you like it to, email me. I would love to have conversations with the vendor make those reports available to you. And please use. Well, I will send them an unlocked version of the tool and have them and work with them to replicate. So the model that MDE, that probably a lot of districts, if not most, are using across the state for measuring student growth with LEA selected assessment is student learning objectives. Joseph talked about student learning objectives already. We produced a guidance document for districts for implementing SLOs. Really, the strength of the SLOs are creating a nationally vetted process. The best thing that comes out of the SLOs is, conversations one of the best things is a collaborative process that's net research vetted for determining what assessments define your teacher's success criteria, and involving the teachers in those choices to make sure that you're using assessments that they value. Because if they don't value the assessments, the results of those assessments aren't going to matter nearly as much for informing what their instruction is. So their course-long academic goals, essentially what SLOs are, is they finish the sentence. I consider myself successful as a teacher if my students are able to. And it goes through a systematic process of finishing that sentence for you. If you were to finish that sentence with data, what would you finish that sentence with? I consider myself successful as a teacher if my students are able to. Do what? With scores. SLOs are not mandated. They're specifically mentioned within legislation. They are specifically mentioned, and that's not going away. Specifically mentioned within the legislation, they're mandated or recommended or mandated by about 25 states across the country. So this is a practice that's pretty wide use. And provide opportunities to use practice to inform instruction. So like multi-tiered system of support, doing MTSS doesn't necessarily improve practice. Using evidence-based practices while implementing MTSS does improve practice. So same thing with SLOs. Here's an example of the SLO template that we have available for download up on our website. Identify student population, identify learning standards, baseline data, what assessments that you're going to use, student growth targets, why did you pick those student growth targets? What a great activity to do within your professional learning communities for those who are implementing that. And what are you doing to get what are you tweaking to get a little bit better results than you did last year? Again, what a great conversation to have both within your PLCs and between the principal and the teacher. We developed a student growth calculator tool. If you put in prior year assessment scores, it automatically calculates differentiated score ranges and what the average change within those differentiated score ranges are for students from previous years. The criteria then for a 1, 2, 3, or 4 is, did I meet prior year score changes? So the average prior year score changes are 45% of students at the 50th percentile, essentially. Did I achieve better than that? Again, if your mindset is not anywhere near facilitation and continuous improvement, this makes no sense whatsoever. What? You put the entire criteria of effective or highly effective as I want to do just as well this year and strive to get a little bit better. That doesn't make any sense. The why we do this is get rid of bad teachers. This doesn't do that. No, it's only designed for the 98% of teachers that we have across our state. How can I get better? How can my students do as least as well as they did last year? And what can I tweak to in order to get a little bit better results? That was, now whether it actually does that or not, but that was what how that tool was designed, how it was intended. We have 2 minutes left. Let's end with some feedback. Since I'd rather do that than show you our contact information. You have both of Joseph and I's contact information. Anyway, so if you could go back to Slido, and go back to, and if you need to enter MSTG, ideally my district would improve our student growth practices from what you're currently implementing. What would you do differently? Now, after our conversations today, what would you do differently to improve your district's student growth practice, and how would you do it?